Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 168.
This week on the podcast, surprising new Iowa polls show that everything we've said would happen is happening now in Iowa, where we said it would happen.
And the GOP candidates are ready with plans for our next immigration war with Canada, where again, every citizen has free healthcare.
O'Malley and Sanders are not afraid to get all up in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's face.
And apparently stealing a Mountain Dew while black in America is yet another offense police punish by death.
The sanitation strike in Beirut is bad enough that it spawned a rare multi-religious movement, as well as great PR for their new sanitation service, Uber.
And the VMAs are happening. Ew.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And we have a special guest today because my dad, Andy, is here.
Yes.
Hi there.
So we've all made it. And we're now going to talk about some of the most exciting polling that's been taking place in the entire universe.
Yes. Well, I think last week we talked about Bernie Sanders being ahead in New Hampshire now.
Yeah.
Or we've been talking about that because there have been a few polls. He's been lagging in Iowa a little bit, but no more.
No more. Bernie Sanders is within 7 points of Hillary Clinton in Iowa.
Yes, and this is the Des Moines Register Iowa poll, which is notorious for being the most accurate. Everybody always sort of like looks to this poll because the caucuses are sometimes hard to poll because you have to do people's first and second choices. And especially with the Democrats, you have to sort of like take account for like who's going to be viable in the room because you can switch sides like during the caucus.
Right.
And they do
everyone
all
just
of,
keeps changing until you settle on one person. Right.
And they do all of that. So, we got the poll this week, and it's Hillary Clinton at 37%, Bernie Sanders at 30%. He's only 7 points behind her. And Joe Biden has 14%, and he's not running.
Of note is the fact that Hillary Clinton is now well below 50%.
Right, which is the first time they've done this poll four times in 2015. It's the first time that she's dipped below 50%, and whoa, did she dip below 50%. I mean, 37 is well below 50%. And it's also important to note that the last time that they did this poll, which was in May, she was ahead 57 to 16. So she was ahead by 41 points.
Yeah.
So she went from ahead by 41 points in 2 months to being ahead by 7 points.
So this is just more of the story of Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
The person, and I mean, it's like shocking poll results, but also like not shocking because we've been saying this is going
to
happen now for months. But so in any case, this also raises the question of what happens when Biden is pulled out of the mix.
Right, because so many people often think that, you know, he's polling at 14%, that the most of that 14% is going to go to her because, you know, on some level, they're kind of the same candidate. I mean, just in terms of,
policies,
you know,
policy-wise.
Joe Biden is not so far to the left that you would think that those people would go to Sanders.
No.
Right? So, but that's not actually what happens because Hillary only goes from 37 to 43% when you take Biden out of the equation. So that's only an increase of 7%, and Biden's polling at 14%. So they didn't all go to Hillary.
No, and it also raises the question of where Sanders' support is coming from. And so they've sort of done polling to find out whether his people are just angry at Hillary or whether they're into Sanders himself. And like 96% of them are voting because of policy positions that he holds, not because they just like are mad at Hillary Clinton.
Which leads one to wonder if the people who are supporting Sanders are supporting him because of his policy positions. Why did the people leave Hillary? Did they leave because of policy positions, or did they just decide that they like Sanders' policy positions better?
Well, and also, are these people that like weren't voting before? Like, where did these people come from?
Well, he did lead, and I didn't put this on the doc, but that he was way ahead with people who identified themselves as first-time caucus goers.
Interesting.
Yes.
This is what we always talk about with Democrats when they run exciting candidates. More people show up. It's the whole when Democrats vote, Democrats win thing.
Yes.
But
I think that people, and that's important because even if he doesn't end up getting the nomination, you would hope at least some of those people who are identifying themselves as first-time caucus goers would end up voting for whoever the nominee is.
Right.
So even if he ends up losing, what he's doing
is exciting for everyone, regardless.
Yeah.
Because then people will vote for things, which always helps.
Right.
But yeah, a pollster in Iowa basically said that it was like 2008 all over again.
Oh,
it's like we're seeing the 2008, the Hillary Clinton Iowa curse just claims another Hillary Clinton victim.
Yeah, because right now at this time, she was ahead of both Edwards and Obama by like 6 and 7%.
Yeah.
So that's where she's at right now.
And she
got third to both of those people, lest we forget.
Her support has been dropping, like, so dramatically and so quickly.
And also, I think it's important to note, too, because a lot of people, I think, would maybe presume that the reason that her support is eroding because of this email scandal, and we talked a lot about that last week, and that's not why. Because the majority, something like 61% of all the Democrats polled said that that wasn't it, and like 80% or something.
Also, that has never had the markings of a Democrat scandal.
No.
Like, it's a scandal because Republicans are, like, all up in arms about it. Like, Benghazi, you know? Like, it's a little bit less sort of manufactured than Benghazi because it does raise questions about kind of how, you know, this sort of veil of secrecy that that everyone sort of presumes she operates under. But it's also sort of, like, it's not the kind of thing that gets Democrats all bothered. It's the kind of thing that gets Republicans nuts.
Yeah.
But they love a conspiracy.
It's the kind of thing that gets the general electorate.
It's the kind of thing that gets like CNN nuts, like
which gets the general electorate nuts, because what they do is they start spinning it and framing it in a way that makes it worse than it is. Whatever doubts people had about her honesty and forthrightness become amplified in a
What we see happen, I think, with every conspiracy-ish thing that starts with her, is it gets blown into a bigger thing that where everyone's just sort of like worried, because everyone's already worried about her secrecy thing.
She's a conspiracy magnet.
She's a conspiracy
magnet.
Yes.
Anything that heightens that.
Right. Our concerns about her gets blown out immediately.
Right.
It's like, she can't be stopped.
At least they haven't questioned whether or not she's been born here.
That's true. You were reading news about how many people are, like, how many of the Republican nominees,
the
Republican primary people are
questioning.
Four of them.
Four of them, and the only one who the ultimate birther nut seems to feel would be problematic is actually Rick Santorum.
Which, surprise, surprise.
Interesting.
His father is an Italian. He was born in Italy.
This guy, by the way, was using criteria that involved you having to have two parents that were unquestionably loyal to the U.S.
His
methodology was a little suspect.
Interpretation of the 14th Amendment is a little
unusual.
adds things that are not quite written.
Yeah, it's a curious,
interesting.
It's a curious scenario. Mm-hmm. An unrelated topic, but relating to the Democrats, that I just noticed this week. And we don't have much of a story to go with this, but Bernie Sanders has been defending his positions on gun control this week because he only has a D- from the NRA, which is not acceptable if you're a Democrat. You have to have an F if you're going to move forward.
Right.
And the reason he has a D-, he voted against the Brady Bill. That's probably the actual reason.
Right.
But he also, it turns out, has been, you know, because he's always talking about, I'm from a state that has a big hunting tradition, blah, blah, blah. It turns out there are almost no gun control laws in Vermont.
Yeah, and they're not shooting each other.
And they're not shooting each other somehow.
He hasn't had to vote for gun control.
I mean,
he's been presented with gun control votes, and I think that he will obviously have to defend those, and he has been having to. But
he's
also
basically been saying, like, for me, just voting for gun control is already something that, you know, for my constituents can be jarring because they don't have any gun control.
Right. Well, and I think that he has also sort of, like, the way that he's trying to spin it, I think, is smart, too, because he's saying it's going to take someone like me to be able to actually deal with this, because I come from a state where, you know, we are able to, you know, not kill each other
with
all of our
guns. How are they not killing each other with all those guns?
Well, I don't know, but
it's
a little
state, but there aren't many people there.
No, and 97% of them are just white middle-class people, basically.
Right. Right. Uh-huh.
They're all like each other, so they don't kill each other.
Cause they have really bad aim.
Bad aim. Vermonters.
Yes.
Not famous for their aim.
So, I don't know. I don't think that'll become a huge problem.
No, I don't think it will be a problem. But
I don't personally like
it. I thought
like
it was interesting that Vermont is somehow existing without gun control.
I know.
Like, how are, like, they're like a Nordic state up there. They just somehow, like, live there, and everyone's pretty happy, and they just sort of hang out, and they go camping, I bet.
I'm sure they camp a lot.
I bet they camp up a storm over there.
Yeah.
They go snowshoeing. It's probably nice in Vermont. But also, I would hate it. In any case, there's also been some Republican polls
in
Iowa.
Which is just as interesting, I would say, probably. Because Trump is still winning.
Right.
Like, he is everywhere.
Right. But he's at 23% now.
But in a strong second place, Ben Carson.
Like, what is happening right
now? Where is he going?
Who are these people?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's They're the only two right now that are in double digits, which means all those people that were leading before, the only people that were in double digits before, you know, the Jebs and the, who was it?
Well,
it
Scott
was like
Walker,
Jeb and Scott Walker and I think, you know, like Marco Rubio was sort of heading up there, and Rand Paul, I think, was almost up there. None of those people are in the double digits anymore.
Nope.
Those people are just sinking ships. Mm-hmm. Thank God, by the way, Scott Walker. I think Scott Walker, finally, once everyone realized that he's, like, as dopey looking as he is, was, like, never... Like, I think at the time that we were excited about him, no one knew how dopey he was. And then we had, you know, we had to learn that his bald spot he's in denial about because he's saying that he bumped his head. And
oh, yeah,
then we also had to, like, watch him debate. And he looked so nerdy compared to the other guys. Yeah. The other guys look like cliche Republicans. He looked like such a nerd compared to them.
Yeah. Well, he's an idiot, too.
He's also dumb. That's another problem that he
faces.
Which
isn't necessarily a problem for Iowa
for them,
Republican
no,
caucus goers,
but for America.
Nonetheless.
Right.
Yeah.
It's worth noting.
Yeah. Well, and this poll is obviously the most troublesome for him, too, because this is his sort of self-proclaimed firewall. I mean, it's the first state, but it's Iowa or bust for him. So,
right.
I mean,
without Iowa, he doesn't...
Even a second place finish...
He's busted.
He's busted. He's busted. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think... Also, interestingly, Ben Carson has the highest favorability ratings of any candidate currently in the Republican pool. He's at 79% favorability.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's crazy, too.
I mean, I guess he's likable enough.
I mean,
why
he doesn't...
Not?
Right, he doesn't seem like he would murder you like some of the other ones. That,
he's a doctor.
But he's a doctor.
Yeah,
he's
right.
got, you know, he's learned some bedside... He's a brain surgeon. He's had to comfort children. He worked
he
with kids.
He likes to remind us that.
Exactly. That's the only thing he has to remind us of.
It's the only qualification
he has. It's the only quality he has.
The only Republican nominee who has any idea of where the brain is and how it works.
So true.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's still shocking that... Because I think that Trump's favorability ratings are probably... And they're in the low 60s, I think, or something,
Yeah,
right?
They're actually...
They're pretty high.
They're above water in Iowa, which they aren't everywhere.
No.
So, I mean...
And I'm really surprised by that because I thought that he would go the Chris Christie route of not being... Of being too sort of, like, aggressive for Iowa voters. But I think he's sort of managing his aggressiveness, his tri-state area-ness in a smarter way than Christie.
He's also channeling their anger and frustration in a way that... makes them more willing to forgive the fact that he sounds like he's from Queens.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
But yeah, he's definitely in a more favorable position than I expected him to be. The two of them are really killing it on favorability.
Right. Well, and also when you take into account first and second choices, they're actually tied.
Yeah.
So Ben Carson doing really well. And also, they really dug into these numbers on Meet the Press this morning. And Chuck Todd, I think, rightly noted that... Ben Carson is leading with Christian conservatives. And he said, if I looked at this poll and this caucus were this week, I would think Ben Carson would actually win.
Oh.
Which...
That's wild.
But the Republican nominee often does not win the Iowa caucus.
Right.
So...
No, Iowa is not a great bellwether for...
For the Republicans.
The Republicans.
Anyway. We do a pretty decent job with the Democrats.
Good with the Democrats. The Republicans... They're too crazy.
They always pick the nuttiest
one. They pick the nuttiest one. Yeah. They picked Santorum last
They picked Santorum. They picked Huckabee.
They picked Huckabee.
Yeah.
That's when you know, guys.
That's
so
right.
Ben Carson is actually a step up.
He's a step up.
I know.
In
right?
terms of their
He
past
has a
choices.
Better understanding of science than Mike Huckabee, for sure.
Certainly.
Right.
I mean, not history, but science, definitely.
Yeah. But also, what's interesting is that when you add up the support of... Okay, so there's 17 nominees... Three of the nominees are getting almost 50%, and they are the people who have never held elected office. Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina, who's actually pulling a 5%, which is pretty decent for her.
Yeah, for
another,
her. Remember, she was in the kitty debate
Another
before.
Good sign that she might get into the big kids debate the next time around. But and the thing that's fueling this is that 75% of Republicans either said that they were unsatisfied or mad as hell, which was one of the options that they could
That's
pick
the kind
in the polling.
Of thing. That's an option you'd only get in the Republican polling.
Yeah, at their own party in Congress.
Yeah.
So that's troublesome for the people who are Republicans in that Congress, because a lot of them are in this race.
Yeah, I was going to... Well, and also, it's troublesome just in terms of how sort of like this next election will go on a larger scale, because it means that people may be voting out Congress members that were thought to be untouchable as they're going to vote for the presidency. Like, I mean, it's not a good sign ever when you see a wave of resentment against one party during a presidential year. That doesn't ever bode well for the party that's in power.
Yeah. Particularly if it's by members of their own
party. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't like the Republican Congress either, but that's...
I was never voting for them.
That. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's really sort of hilarious what's happening over there. And interestingly, Scott Walker is losing ground as he continues to have an above-water favorability rating. So that...
Yeah, he has the second highest favorability rating. People like him, but they don't want to vote for him. Yeah.
Well, he's got a dumb face, guys.
Also, the more he says, the less they want to vote for him.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is the thing that I found so shocking at the Republican debate, and maybe I mentioned it before on the podcast, but so many of those people I had only ever seen pose in photographs or, like, deliver sound bites. I'd never seen them talk or stand for any length of time. And so many of them were so much less charismatic than I expected them to be.
Well, I think that's probably the case with Scott Walker and actually Jeb Bush, too, because he's dropping in the polls. We're going to talk about him in just a second. But I think that he's so...
He looks like a Bush, so we expected him to look presidential.
Right.
And he just looks like a nerd on
stage. And he's also more boring than his brother. I mean, we talk about how much we hated his brother because he was awful. But I mean, like, he was sort of like... a guy that, you know, often got talked about when he was first elected. He was the guy that you wanted to go have a beer with.
Right.
You don't want to have a beer with Jeb Bush.
No.
I mean, that's like would be sleep-inducing. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
it'd be the most horrible beer that you'd ever...
Right.
It's yeah, he's a terrible candidate because he's boring, and also he looks a little bewildered all the time.
But
that was what I was shocked. But
I think you're right about Scott Walker, though, because a lot of people know the things that Scott Walker has done. He sort of busted the unions. He made all these reforms in Wisconsin.
Right.
He beat back the recall election. But you didn't really necessarily ever have to, like, look at him during that whole process.
You just had to know what was going on. Where he had, like, a charging, you know, he looked like he was charging forward in photos and stuff. And you were like, that guy's powerful. Yeah, when he actually stands on stage and he's, like, kind of short and, like, kind of silly looking. And he's got man-child syndrome, which is, you know, something I can't stand.
Yeah.
He reminds me a little of David Gregory in that regard. He's got the kind of man-child syndrome where you're like, you were not a well-liked teenager. You know, so it just sort of, it doesn't add up to a compelling picture of, and the Republicans, because that's when I posted that Republican hair thing, that's kind of what I was driving at.
Oh, yeah.
Again, the Republicans are, like, defined in many ways by, like, just looking the part. They're actors.
Yeah.
They're like, Ronald Reagan is the ideal of their party.
Totally.
And the man was not anything but an actor. Like, that's what you have to look like to be an effective Republican politician. You have to look like old money, or you have to look like a movie star. And, like, these people just look like a bunch of mean nerds. Anyway, I'm getting off that.
Speaking of hair, really quickly, did you see that Donald Trump called a woman up onto the stage to pull on his hair this week to confirm that it was real at some rally that was happening?
No.
Yes.
He did.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Also, was it? What do we know?
Yes,
it is. Real.
It's real.
What?
Uh-huh. Yep.
No.
I mean, it's a very elaborate comb over, but I mean, the hair itself is implanted into the head.
Interesting. He's gotten implants, right?
He has promised if he's elected that he will change his haircut because he won't have as much time to do it.
Oh, God, what's that going to be? That's almost enough to vote for the man.
That's right.
I'd love to know what happens. Solve for this problem. God.
So that's his natural hair that looks like a cotton candy fluff on his head?
He's
How does he get his hair to do that?
I
do not want to see Donald Trump in a buzz cut.
No, me either.
It's confusing already to think about. Meanwhile, speaking of bad news for various Republican candidates, Jeb Bush had a bunch of fundraisers jump ship this week.
Yeah, he had, like, three of his, like, biggest Florida-based fundraisers leave. Great.
Here's why. Because nothing's going on with his campaign.
No, he's dropped now from... Well, he's way behind in Iowa, which we just told you. But he's also dropped now from the general, like, national average. He was in second place behind Trump, and he's now dropped down to third. And it's just not... I mean, he's already got more money than he needs. He could stop fundraising now and he'd be fine.
His super PAC has a lot of money.
His campaign is having trouble raising money, though. Right, and there was a report that they, like, cut people's salaries this week, the campaign.
That's a bad sign, guys.
For a very Republican way of dealing with
it. Totally. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He also suffers more from this happening than other candidates who you would be more likely to forgive fundraising trouble with. Because he looks like... The only reason we would elect him is because he looks like he can fundraise.
He's
a rich guy. Like, what else is he offering? Nothing.
Right. And the reason that people have been sort of considering him the front runner...
It's just money.
...is because of money. Because he has never been in first place in the polls.
Had $115,000 within seconds of forming.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only reason he was even a viable candidate. And he's not... living up to it.
No, he's
those
not.
Bushes are such a disappointing family.
Yeah.
I don't know. Meanwhile, the immigration debate continued this week with a lot of exciting thoughts and feelings from various Republican candidates.
Yeah.
We begin with Scott Walker, who this week thought, hey, you know what? Building a wall with Canada is not such a bad idea either. That's a legitimate issue for us to look
it
at.
Is.
You know those Canadian immigrants.
Somebody brought it up in New Hampshire at a campaign event,
right.
Obviously. Like one of his people at a campaign event.
Would.
Might do, yes.
Keep those filthy Canadians out of our country.
That's right.
Also, can you imagine the kind of manpower that a wall with Canada would involve?
I was going to say.
That's an undertaking.
It's a much bigger situation than the one
Mexico
with
wall.
Mexico.
Like, all right, three or four states, you have to build a wall. Like,
right.
That's not even doable, but like, all right, you try. You go ahead. Canada, we're talking about the entire northern borders. Like,
yeah.
That's 3,000 miles of wall.
I know. Well, and also, I mean, as you and I said last week, we don't even have a net immigration problem with Mexico. Also,
no.
There's hundreds of miles of wall currently.
Right, that are currently not keeping Mexican immigrants out of America because they're still right next door.
They're still right next door.
You can build all the walls that you want to a country that's right next door. People are still going to need to cross the border for various reasons.
Right.
There are people who live in Mexico who come to school in America.
Yeah.
There's a whole world of people who live border lives. I mean, the same with Canada. People are going to buy things in Canada because they're cheaper sometimes when they live in the northern states.
Yeah.
You want to rob them of that ability just to, you know, they're going to buy prescription drugs up there.
I know.
There are bus groups of old people that go up to Canada just to get their prescription drugs. And I feel like we'd be ruining life for a lot of old people if we built that wall.
They're doing that with Mexico, too, as my parents
as we know, right. Your parents are on those buses.
I've got a stockpile of Z-Packs to prove it.
Your mom just went down to get some dental work, I believe.
She sure did. Yeah. Yeah. She went there legally, and she had her passport.
Right. But I mean, the point is that there's, like, a border life going on in the world.
Right.
You don't need to be legal. Like, you don't need to go into Mexico illegally.
No,
there's
don't.
Nothing at the border there. You just go through a gate, and you're
just
there.
Walk right in.
There's not even anyone checking to see if you're coming. You've made it into Mexico. You don't need a passport to go to Mexico.
No.
You only need one to come back. They're letting any American who wants to come head right into Mexico with no problem.
That's right.
So Scott Walker, as far as I'm concerned, can just go ahead and single-handedly build that wall if he so chooses. That's fine. If that's a project that we could let Scott Walker handle that project and just sort of discount him for the rest of time.
Yeah.
And it'd be fine.
It's the threat of the French Canadians coming over the border.
No, they're French and
that's
Canadian.
Right. Oh, God. Seriously.
That's a real.
How much worse could you get?
How many Canadians are thinking to themselves, like, God, if only I could get rid of this free health care and head over to the States, everything would be made.
Right.
Like, none of them.
And keep the American riffraff out.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what they're thinking in Canada. Yeah. They have all these American old people coming to use up all their prescription drugs.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Chris Christie had some thoughts, too.
Yeah, he has another plan altogether.
Yeah. It's similar to the plan that their favorite people to compare people to, the Nazis, had when dealing with Jewish people. This time he wants to figure out how we can track immigrants more effectively and thought to himself, FedEx probably has a solution for this.
They do.
They track packages all over the world.
Right. If FedEx can do it, then certainly people.
Exactly. And actually, to Chris Wallace's credit, he went there. This is the exchange. Chris Christie said, this is once again a situation where the private sector laps us in the government with the use of technology. Let's use the same type of technology to make sure that 40% of the 11 million people who are here illegally don't overstay their visas. If FedEx can do it, why can't we use the same type of technology? And Wallace said, they don't have a label on their wrists. And alluding, as you might imagine, to concentration camps prisoners. Uh-huh. And Christie said, no, we can do it. And we should bring in the folks from FedEx who use the technology to make sure that we're able to do it. Wallace also noted that people aren't packages, which is another important thing to note in a conversation about tracking people using FedEx technology.
He's not tattooing them. He's just barcoding
them. No, he's going to barcode them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he'll inkjet them. That's fine.
Indelible inkjets.
That's not a tattoo at all.
No. And that way when they come back, we can just scan them.
Exactly.
It'll be very efficient.
Printing ink that won't come off onto people is not anything like tattooing them.
Not at all.
That's true.
Yes. No, but I mean, that's too dumb for words.
It's
too dumb.
It really is just, it's so dumb that it's even actually surprising from him,
I know.
Who I don't often think of as a genius.
Dumb.
Right, but I, like, You know, I mean,
here, like, I feel like also FedEx isn't using black magic to track packages all over the world. They're using a computer system. They lose packages from time to time. They're not above doing that. Just as we do. And like them, we are using a computer system to scan people in as they come in. We're fingerprinting them. We're taking their photos. And we're putting them in a giant database. Like, we're already doing too much. That's too much work already.
I know.
Like,
well, and also just the whole...
We're not barcoding them.
I mean, comparing the two is like comparing apples to elephants.
Well, of course.
You know what
I mean?
But I mean,
like,
it's just like...
What he's suggesting is that we use computers to do that, which is what we're doing. And it's not working in the way that he wants it to work. And that's not... Something that knowing that he used computers solves, like
scanners to every cop and every ICE agent.
Show me your wrist.
Show me your wrist, and they can barcode you at randomly.
That's not Big Brother-y at all.
No,
well, they're only immigrants.
No,
I know they're not. They're not people.
Don't be ridiculous. Ted Cruz, among the other people that are sort of against above the law these days.
Yeah. Not in regards to immigration.
Not in regards to immigration.
He probably has thoughts on immigration.
He has to be careful about immigration though, because then it raises a bunch of questions about him. So he often steers clear. He's often the last person to chime in into a ridiculous immigration policy debate. But he does have a lot of thoughts about Planned Parenthood.
Obviously.
Most of his thoughts are about Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And
well,
this
he's
week
prepping a shutdown over Planned Parenthood
Yes, exactly. I mean, he loves a single issue shutdown anyway. That's his bread and butter.
Yeah.
This week he decided that he was gonna channel his hatred of Planned Parenthood into the churches. And asked a whole bunch of pastors who are all in doing this violating US law.
Thousands of them.
Thousands of them.
Yeah.
To deliver a sermon that he had written about defunding Planned Parenthood.
That's right.
Now, you might remember from John Oliver or us that churches are tax-exempt organizations.
That's right.
They do not pay taxes. They make money, oftentimes.
And the reason that they don't pay taxes is because, in theory, they don't get involved in politics.
Right. They're not allowed to make political statements.
Right. So reading,
among them, the shutting down of Planned Parenthood.
Right. Reading a statement from a person running for president who is a sitting United States senator.
Who wants you to use your pulpit to affect public policy.
Right.
That's illegal.
That'd be illegal.
That's not legal. Yeah.
Right.
So, in any case, this is still happening, regardless of whether it's legal or not.
Yeah.
Thousands of pastors have been asked to deliver this Ted Cruz sermon.
Sounded like a great sermon, though, just from the insanity of the one bit that we pulled from the Ross Story article, which was a real, I mean, you know, as you love to go ahead and read it.
Here's a quote, because I feel like...
You're the perfect one to read this, because you're always so... Whenever you end up in a church, which is from time to time, usually to hear me sing something, you're always really end up, you know, scratching your head at some of the...
A lot of religious metaphor goes right over my head.
Yeah, And this was rife with them.
Yes. When an individual or a nation stiff-arms the character of God and embraces an abomination as the law of the land, it ends in disaster. When rebellious people disregard the compass of the most powerful, it is a very short step to dismembering the bodies of the most vulnerable. Like other nations, America has taken that step. It's time for a turnaround.
Mm. Wow.
Ew.
Yeah.
I don't even know...
If it made sense, it would be biblical.
It would be...
It's hard to know whether
it's talking
it does,
about
though,
dismembering
or not, right?
And arms, stiff-arming... I mean, it's got a lot of words
God.
In it. Stiff-arming God.
The character of God.
No, that's a...
God forbid.
That's right. That's a thing you don't want to do if you're in a church, I guess.
Yeah.
I personally have never had much trouble with it.
But, yeah. I always have to look at Lila when the pastor's speaking to make sure she's not embarrassing me by laughing uncontrollably.
Because that's
during,
a real thing that's happened,
during a prayer.
Well, that prayer that I did that at, though,
that was
took
a
left turn.
It was very circuitous and never really got to where I think it intended to go.
No, so the route that it took was rife with hilarity.
It was.
I just, don't invite me to your church ever, guys, because I have an issue bursting into laughter in churches. Brent's church is not the first time that that's happened to me.
Yeah.
I sat through a lot of bar and bat mitzvah services at 13 without acting respectfully towards the people speaking.
Yeah.
It's just not something that's in my character to do right. Like, I can't listen to speeches. It's not, I don't know what to do
about that. Yeah, you don't even like political speeches.
I don't even really like political speeches that much.
Yeah.
No, I like a speech at a rally. Where you're like in the rally and everyone's cheering and you can shout stuff.
Yeah.
I like to participate though. If I can't participate, I can't be involved.
Before we get off of religion really quickly, going back to Donald Trump again, because
he's
the only person
that
anybody's reporting
not do
on
that,
in the news. But did you see he got asked this week what his favorite Bible verse was?
No.
And he said, Oh, he didn't answer because he said that was very personal to him. Because
he's not read any Bible, any Bible verse.
He had no idea what it was.
Right.
He didn't know the answer.
No. So that's like asking me what my favorite Bible verse is.
He just insinuated that it was rude that they asked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, he, like me, has... I had mysteriously at work a Bible sitting on my desk that I think had been a prop. So sure. I've recently touched a Bible.
Yeah.
But that's the closest I've been to a Bible, really, ever. And... like me, I think Donald Trump probably recently held up a Bible to be like, I'm a person who has a Bible, because people have been asking. And I think that's probably as far as he got in the Bible having business.
He owns hotels.
Right.
Of course he has Bibles.
Right.
That's right.
He has thousands of Bibles.
Yes.
He personally owns thousands of Bibles.
And he's never... rich, and he can get more Bibles.
Exactly.
Right. I wish what he would have done
all the
been
Bibles
like,
he wants.
Don't ask me that.
Right.
Because I would have even appreciated that answer.
Yeah, just don't ask that.
Right?
That's not the answer. That's not the question.
Yeah.
Any case, here's another great story.
Oh God, this was.
And you were texting me about this as it was as you were watching this.
I was absolutely watching it live at my desk on C-SPAN.
As you do.
Sorry, my
Sorry,
employers. But that's what I was doing.
Right.
Because it was too brilliant to not be watching.
Yeah.
The Democrats had their national summer meeting, like the DNC meeting. It was in Minneapolis, which I think is where isn't that where the convention is?
Can't remember where the
convention was. I want to say that it is, I think, but that's where they were having it. So it was like all the party bigwigs, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was there, everybody was there. And they also had all of the presidential candidates who wanted to come. Jim Webb wasn't there because he was taking his daughter to college.
Also Jim Webb's barely running for president, so he didn't need to be there.
Exactly, I know. But Lincoln Chafee is barely running for president.
That's he's there,
up.
That's true. Well, he's not busy.
Yeah.
All he's doing is running for president.
Yeah. But Bernie Sanders...
And Martin O'Malley were there.
Really came to play to this meeting in a very serious way that was so delicious.
Well, and this is, I think, what is behind this wave for Bernie is there is frustration with this style of Democratic politics that he only benefits from giving voice to. And O'Malley is trying to jump on that wave, has been trying to jump on that wave for a long time. He's not doing it as well because he doesn't have the other things to back it up, the
right.
other lefty policies to back it up. But they both are, like, not kidding around.
They're
when
not.
It comes to taking on the DNC establishment.
Yeah.
And the DNC was basically there to, like, anoint Hillary Clinton, by the way. They were all there having already professed their love of Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So,
well, another thing that came from this meeting was that they that Hillary Clinton, like, released something, but she has, like, basically shored up something like 70% of all the superdelegates or something. Because, like, remember, that's a thing with the Democrats.
Yeah,
like, that became a thing in 2008 when we turned into a delegate battle. But anyway, Martin O'Malley, like, really let them have it. And what was so amazing was that all of the party bigwigs were, like, sitting 2 feet away from him,
right. like, just,
on
like,
the dais.
He just, said it at them in
and,
public.
Like, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, like, noticeably miffed, like, during his speech.
As I'm not surprised to hear, but also as she deserved to be.
Yeah, because he, as we've, I think, talked about before, is pissed at the debate plan.
Yeah.
Because they're only doing 6 debates, which everyone other than Hillary seems to think is, you know, in an attempt to anoint her as the candidate. Because they're sort of, they're not starting them until the fall. They're only having, I think, 4 of them actually before the first, before Iowa. So people are mad because...
Yeah. Well, they've been in a 2-year-long attempt to anoint her, so this is just the next step in their
Yeah, exactly.
strategy.
But O'Malley said... he called it rigged. He called the system rigged. He said, this sort of rigged process has never been attempted before. We are the Democratic Party, not the undemocratic party.
Yeah. And then he went on to say, whose decree is this exactly? Where did it come from? To what end or purpose?
And that was when Wasserman Schultz
was like
yeah.
And then Sanders told reporters that he agreed with O'Malley, as he should.
Right.
Because obviously they're barred from participating in any events that basically don't involve Hillary Clinton.
Yes. And Sanders, like, totally railed on establishment politics.
Yeah.
He said that he used the word, like, establishment politics multiple times in his speech, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
But he said he was he blamed establishment politics as why we lose in midterms, because there's no excitement, because we don't, you know, nominate the
Well,
types
this is what we say all the time.
This is
common
right.
sense things that people already know who are just, like, living in the world that no one inside
right.
the Beltway seems to know.
Right. But he's, you know, saying this
to them.
As a stadium full of establishment people.
Yeah.
So,
well, someone finally needed to tell them.
Yes.
exactly. They weren't knowing.
Yeah. He was asked later if he was when he was talking about establishment politics, if he was talking about Hillary Clinton specifically, and he said, "I'll let you use your imagination on that." Because
this
to his credit, he has not said
he hasn't been trashing her
one negative thing about her at all. He has sort of talked about how he his differences with her, because he always gets asked that, so he talks about the TPP sometimes, he talks about the Keystone Pipeline, but he has never once ragged on her, and he has always said that he's never intends to do so.
And he doesn't have to, because his policy is different enough from hers that he doesn't have to.
Well, and like we said, that's why people love him.
Exactly.
Like when we were talking
about this is a frustration that I think he is giving voice to. That's what's happening here with him, is like, there is a frustration among Democrats where this type of establishment politics ends up making us vulnerable in the general election, and we know it, and we still do it. You know, like, it was like, remember when we went from not running a 50-state strategy to running a 50-state strategy with Howard Dean, and suddenly we were like, oh, there's all this opportunity. If you run a 50-state strategy, everyone in every state is talking about your races, and then more people vote. Like, that's just a thing that works, that it doesn't necessarily, like, you don't need to just put all your resources into certain states, because it's worth running a race in every state just for the general factor of people talking about your candidates. Like, this is, like, common sense stuff that, like, I think if you had asked a lot of people before, they would have been like, of course it makes sense to run in every state.
Yeah.
Because then people in every state will be talking. Yeah. Like, that, people vote when other people tell them they're going to vote, and then everyone feels like they have to vote because, it, you know, like, when people are excited about voting, they just do it. So this is, like, one of those things that he's just giving rise to, like, a common sense thing that everyone already thought that only people who, like, live in D.C. currently couldn't figure out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, Lincoln Chafee...
Also...
he was there. He took a different route.
Yes.
Whereas we just told you that Sanders is not saying negative things about Hillary Clinton. But Lincoln Chafee doesn't care.
No.
he's not a man who's going to be president, so he can say whatever he wants to.
Right.
But he, in his speech, sort of raised some eyebrows because he said that he... was the only, or he said that he was a scandal-free candidate, which is like, obviously, in regards to Hillary Clinton.
Everyone but Hillary Clinton is a scandal-free candidate.
I know.
Also, if that's all he has, then, I mean, what he didn't mention is the scandal of the fact that he's a Republican candidate running in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, didn't talk about that.
No, that's the ultimate scandal, I would argue.
Yeah.
But yeah, they also adopted a $15 an hour minimum wage at this meeting.
Yes.
As their part of their platform.
Which is... interesting, because, I mean, we should have that, because that's sort of like the movement that everyone is sort of getting behind right now.
It also means that the entire party is to the left of one Hillary Clinton,
exactly.
Who is still out there hawking the $12 an hour minimum wage.
Right, exactly. And her reason was because, like, the $15 one is never going to pass. But the Republicans, as we mentioned, already blocked, what was it, like a 10-10
or something? You don't in bargaining for the very, like, little, the least you can ask for. That's not how bargaining works.
No.
That is, in a nutshell, the Clinton principle.
It is.
And that is why...
it's been sort of the Obama principle,
It's been sort of the Obama principle, too, which has been frustrating. I mean, a lot of the time when we talk about frustrations with him, it's his bad bargaining skills. It's because that's just not... that's not how, like, haggling works.
Right.
Like, anyone who's ever tried to purchase an item in a market knows that that's not... Or ask for a raise knows you don't go in being like, I can... at the very least, I need to get $10 an hour more, so I'll ask for $10 an hour more, and then they'll just... they'll probably give that to me. Like, that's not how it works. You go
Or they won't.
You go in, you ask for 15, and when they offer 10, you're like, let's try 12. And then, you know, you do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of, you know, wages.
Yes. There was a big victory this week.
Right. The National Labor Relations Board, this was sort of like a long-awaited ruling, but they ruled, of course, along party lines. I think it was 3-2.
Right.
People can now unionize. Well, fast food workers could always unionize. They haven't really been successful at doing so, but they could only unionize.
But that's partly because
Because of this. Because they, if they unionized, if it was a franchised
company, like most fast food companies are,
they could only lobby and negotiate with the owner of the particular franchise that they were working
for. So then you have some guy who owns 3 McDonald's who's the only person you can negotiate with, and obviously his store policy comes from someone else. Like, he doesn't really control... He's just a businessman.
Right, so you could never negotiate with the
parent corporation. With the corporate head of the franchise.
Now you can.
Which...
that's what this
decision and
was.
So before, it didn't... I mean, when you're negotiating for 100 employees, that's not... there's not much you can do with that negotiation.
There's not much control that
the franchise owner has.
Unionizing never made much sense for fast food workers.
Right.
Because what were they going to get from said unionization?
No, it's like them and a small business owner hacking it out. Like, that doesn't... but these small business owners, their policy is set by a larger entity, and now they can finally negotiate with a larger entity.
Right, yeah.
So that, I think, is going to probably be a pretty decisive change to how the fast food worker unionization push goes.
Right.
I mean, I think that they might get a more successful,
right.
you know.
And it's obviously a big deal because the fast food companies are already sort of, you know, seeming like they're going to, this will end up in the courts.
Yeah.
Republicans
no,
are not happy about it.
No, I think it's a huge
it.
Deal.
People are lobbying Republicans in Congress to deal with it there.
It's
to get this overturned, because I think they can overturn the National Labor Relations Board, I think.
Possibly.
Because that's
I
not,
don't know the policy on
that's
that.
Not like an actual
right, it's not like a court.
Right, yeah, so.
I wonder, though, like, what the PR battle is for that,
yeah,
because
I
feel like in this wave of populism, this is the worst time that a giant multi-billion dollar corporation could try to sue to make sure that their underpaid workers can't negotiate for their wages.
Yeah.
Like, this could be a very interesting talking point that provides even more more excitement behind a Sanders campaign or just at least a sort of leftward move later when this finally kind of
well,
comes
I'm sure
to
he'll
fruition.
Be talking about this.
I mean, he's got
Yeah.
In any case. Oh, more shootings, guys.
Yeah.
Just another day, another shooting.
Lila and I were debating via text earlier whether we really needed to get into the nitty-gritty of this, and we both decided that we didn't.
No, because you saw the news story. There was a guy, disgruntled ex-news employee who, like, shot two people live on air on the news.
Right, so that was upsetting.
That was upsetting
obviously.
To everyone.
And then he went around and posted on Twitter. He posted some GoPro footage because he was filming the whole thing himself. And it was also weird because the image that we got from him was, like, from the camera,
right?
Like the cameraman,
oh, yeah. It was like his
after he had been shot, like the camera was laying like sideways on the ground,
exactly.
And that's how they ended up finding who it was. So I'm, you know,
it was
kind
very
of like
disturbing
crazy and disturbing
situation.
But also, you know, I think we've already moved on in the sense that we're not going to do anything about it.
No, here's a situation that could have been prevented by this guy not having a gun.
Right,
but he had one because we're America,
right.
And he chose to shoot people with
well,
it.
Well, that's the thing that's so upsetting. I mean, you've heard the same thing from both sides. You heard Democrats talk about needing to deal with gun control.
Right.
That's not going to happen. There's a Republican Congress, and also the Democrats haven't shown much balls in this.
No.
Anyway, when
this is
after,
this
after
would be
Newtown,
a great
Newton or some of the Democrats wouldn't even vote for background checks. The Republicans are all blaming it on mental health, but like,
where's the mental health services then?
Right. Right,
we
mental
don't have
health
services.
Services, and the only way that you can possibly figure out how to not give people who have mental health issues guns is to have a background check situation,
right.
To make sure that people who have a history of that don't get the guns. And he did have a history of that, so
we're
back where we started. So
yeah.
It's not even worth telling you any more than
right.
What we've just said.
And
the breath that we've wasted.
Us not having mental health services led to another tragedy this week as well. Because
yes.
There was a young man who was arrested. He was a young black man who stole a Mountain Dew and a Snickers bar and a zebra cake from a convenience store.
Right.
Was in jail because of it. He
right.
had mental health issues.
Right, he had bipolar
disorder, bipolar and schizophrenic. They said, you know, they said that they were supposed to move him to some sort of mental health facility, but they either the facility was full or they never actually tried to. It's unclear what actually happened. But he died in jail instead.
Yeah.
After stealing a Mountain Dew.
Yeah, he wasn't eating.
He stole $5 worth of snacks, and he had mental health issues and starved himself to death in jail because we couldn't get him a bed at a mental hospital. So that's exactly what's happening here.
Yep. Oh, God.
Let's see. A classic American story.
Yep.
See, stealing Mountain Dew while black.
Getcha.
That'll get you every time.
Yeah.
See?
God.
Meanwhile, we're finally going to talk about the sanitation situation in Beirut.
Yes.
Because it's gotten very exciting. And we have my dad here, who actually lived in Beirut
for
a year.
Beirut.
So he probably has some thoughts on this as well. But there has been this like massive sanitation strike going on in Beirut, like all summer.
Yeah.
And it's stinky and disgusting.
Yeah.
And they already don't have the greatest infrastructure. They closed one of the biggest landfills.
The only landfill.
And they have the landfill. They had a bunch of, I think, smaller ones that had closed that they had to reopen but are closed again or something. Yeah. They're trying to figure out what to do.
They're kind of like freelance landfills in some of the surrounding villages.
Yeah. Well, the freelance landfills currently are just
are overwhelmed. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they have been for about 6 months.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah, and so the first thing that's hilarious about, I mean, this is not hilarious, but the thing that's interesting about this is that one way that residents found to start dealing with this problem is that Uber stepped in and started picking up people's trash for them.
Yeah.
You could, like, call and ask Uber to come pick up your trash.
And it's free.
And it was free, and
right.
Uber would come and get your
trash.
Well,
Uber sort of has, this is the
this
latest.
This is a thing that they do. They've given out ice cream before. They, you know, they do stuff like this
right.
as a PR stunt from time to time. So this was their latest PR stunt.
And people are loving it.
Yeah. Well, it's... Thank God someone stepped in to do a stunt here because...
Oh, to pick up the trash.
To pick up the trash. Yeah. Because certainly the services, the sanitation service isn't doing it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, residents of Beirut have formed a sort of a group that is surprisingly diverse in its makeup, because usually in Lebanon, most of the political parties are religious-based, like religiously-based parties, and they have this like weird proportional representation system where like certain religions get a certain proportion of the representation in the parliament or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's
like,
and the president it's like, is, I think, Sunni or Shia, and then...
Right. Well, they don't have one currently, I think.
They
right.
don't,
right?
Because they can't agree on it.
Right,
they,
yeah.
They also have a legislature that has extended its own terms for the last, you know,
right.
So they wouldn't have elections for like the last year.
Right, so it's like political chaos over there. But this this sanitation strike has created this group called You Stink that has been having these massive protests in downtown Beirut.
Well, and I think this is just sort of like, it seems to have brought to a head so many of the larger issues, because this government has been sort of like widely, you know, they're one of the most inept in the world. I think like just when, you know, world organizations like rate government effectiveness.
Yeah.
So, but I think this has just been such a visceral thing because it's garbage.
Well,
because
people are living in a garbage strewn.
But you know, they've had problems with power recently. They've had problems with
not just
water,
recently.
Even though there's you know a lot of natural.
I mean, Beirut
water.
Is a city
None
where if you you have to have a generator or generator access because the power goes out at unpredictable times throughout
the
day.
The power goes out in Beirut.
Yeah.
4 hours a day
In
different areas.
Right.
So there are freelance generators.
Yeah.
Who, like, string...
There's all these...
Wires.
There's extension cords. Yeah, you pay for it. And there's extension cords that are, like, strewn all over the streets that are going in people's windows, basically, and providing them power when the power goes out.
Which is a fire hazard. And in most of the country, the power is out 12 hours a day.
Wow.
So there are parts of the country where there's power during the day, and then there are other parts where there's power at night. They have not enough electrical generating capacity, and the government, what government there is, has not been able to get around to figure out how to increase
their so they've
power
had
generating capacity.
Like, they have infrastructure problems of a pretty massive scale already.
Right.
And this... Adding garbage to that mix is not a solution to a problem.
Well, that's sort of something that you just sort of can't escape, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
there's you can live without power for 4 hours a day when it comes down to it. You can't live in a world where the garbage is just piling up and there's nowhere to go in the summer in Beirut.
In a city with narrow, winding streets and no
place to. We're talking about a very old city that's set up with narrow, old streets. And
which gets really hot.
Right, yes.
Summer.
I bet, yeah. I'm sure it's over 100 degrees, probably,
it's
there now.
It's not a great situation. Yeah. But so in any case, You Stink recently threw a really big protest in Beirut where it gave the government 72 hours to respond to its demands, although its demands are everything. Because it's a group, it's like Occupy. It's like a group of everyone, and they're just mad about everything. And so their demands are all the demands. There's a lot of demands you might have in that situation.
Yeah.
But I think, interestingly, a lot of the demands have to do with the way that the government, as it's set up now, is not addressing people's needs anymore. You know, at one time, it made sense to have this sort of, like, proportional representation by religious affiliation and that kind of thing. But there are, at this point... The government's not addressing actual, like, human needs.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people are just generally frustrated by having to deal with this sort of ineffective form of government.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happens, because it's just, like, gridlock.
Because the way the system is set up, if one of the parties decides
to
withhold support, nothing happens. And one of the parties is always...
And we're talking about a place that has a large Christian population, a large Shia population, a large Sunni population. I mean, everyone lives in Lebanon.
Right. Well, and they're also dealing... The other thing that is sort of exacerbating this problem is that they are dealing with a lot of refugees right now.
Right.
There's over a million refugees who are coming
and they have just,
coming
like,
from Syria right
now
because
they
of
have
what's going
Syria
on there.
Syria on one side. They already have, like, a permanent Palestinian refugee problem that is just, like, they have these, like, permanent Palestinian camps there that where they're not citizens, so they're not allowed out really, but they're just like stuck in these camps and have been.
And the Syrians are about 25% of the population now.
Yeah.
There's 1.5 million Syrian refugees in a country of just over 4 million people.
Wow. Yeah.
And they are doing the things
that refugees
we complain about undocumented workers doing. They're working for lower wages. They're opening unlicensed businesses because they have to support themselves.
Yeah.
And so they're generally disrupting a fairly fragile economic system as it was, because unemployment was fairly high in Lebanon. There haven't been enough jobs for people for a long time. It's one of the reasons there's such a diaspora. So many people leave to work elsewhere.
Right, because Lebanon's tiny, but there's Lebanese people everywhere. It's a very, international diaspora. Yeah. But so in any case, I'm curious to see where Ustink leads. It's like a ladder. It's like Lebanon's version of, an almost Arab Spring situation, where it's just, things have sort of reached a point of such ineffective nonsense that everyone's sort of something has to happen.
It's the first time that there have been large-scale political demonstrations that have not been organized
by any group.
one of the political parties.
Yeah,
I mean,
haven't done that before.
Having lived there, do you think that anything comes of this? Is there enough? Is there anything that the people can actually do to sort of to get the government to work?
The government at this point is fairly immune, because until they call an election, they're not going to be called to account.
They're not going to call a dictatorial parliament at this point.
Right. They're in a parliament that keeps reelecting itself.
Yeah.
And they haven't had a president for a year.
Mm. Right.
And, of course, who can call elections? The president has to call elections. So they haven't had a president for a year, and the parliament keeps reelecting itself, and they're essentially isolated. It may make a difference simply because this is the first time so many people have showed up and voiced and been willing to present themselves publicly to do that.
Well, and also, what's the point at which, because we're talking about an Israel border state that already has some sort of nefarious ties with, the southern part of Lebanon is basically sort of autonomously controlled by Hezbollah. At what point does this destabilize what is already kind of
it's almost destabilized now.
A very concerning situation to the point that America suddenly gets involved.
Hezbollah is a major political party in Lebanon. And it's also a militia that is fighting to support Assad in Syria and supporting Hamas and building, bases along the border to, periodically shell Israel.
But I'm curious, is Hezbollah, because obviously, we know all of the terrible things that Hezbollah does, but one of the things that we talked a lot about when they were, having, the last time there was this huge conflict with Israel,
basically delivers basic services
Hamas
to people?
Hamas supplies the services.
No, Hezbollah
does supply certain services and employment of a sort and money in the southern cities, like Sidon.
That's not affecting Beirut necessarily.
No, Hezbollah. Right. Beirut has a few strongholds of Hezbollah. Mm. It's a very, because the neighborhoods are broken up that way. But Hezbollah is, its stronghold is in the south with the Shia, relatively recent immigrants, the Shia immigrants. The Palestinians are not. Well, they're mostly Sunni, and Hezbollah doesn't have a lot of influence in the camps, and Hamas, being Palestinian, is not really, it has good relations, but they're not really connected because one is Sunni and one is Shia.
Yeah.
Right.
And the war in Syria is increasing the tension between Sunni and Shia in Lebanon, because the Shia support Assad and the Sunni support the people, the rebels who are out to get Assad, and the Christians are confused.
Right.
Which is probably a position that they found themselves in before, and how they became Lebanon in the first place. Because didn't it used to just be part of Syria?
It was. It was Syria Liban, and what Lebanon was the Christian sector.
It was the Christian part of Syria.
Syria Liban.
Yeah.
And then they were probably like, enough of this bullshit. What are you guys up to? It's crazy. In any case.
Gosh. Another place I imagine probably smells.
Yes.
Is Burning Man.
It's got to.
Which is happening this week.
If it doesn't smell, it
itches.
It itches,
right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
They first of all have a disgusting, like, tiny bug infestation going on there, which doesn't surprise me. Because where are the showers in Burning Man? Nowhere. You don't shower at Burning Man.
That's why it smells.
Yeah. But also, there was this interesting article in New York Magazine today about how the ultimate goal of the Burning Man organizers, because it gets accused a lot of, like, selling out to corporate overlords, because all these Silicon Valley rich people go down to Burning Man.
They come in, like, Mark Zuckerberg, like, very elaborate caravans into Burning Man now these days. Yeah. Like, that's obviously not the original kind of
intent,
you know,
of Burning
intention
Man.
Of it.
But they want to make it into, like, a permanent colony. Which I say, go ahead.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Why not have all the Burning Man people stay in Burning Man? Then we don't have to hear them talk about Burning Man when they get back.
Right.
And that would be great.
What happens at Burning Man?
Can literally stay in Burning Man permanently.
Yeah.
And never come back
you
to bother
You never have to leave to tell us about it.
Which would be great.
Right. You wouldn't be able to post on Facebook from there.
Nope.
Which is I personally get annoyed by it.
Yeah, I know. Burning Man Facebook is the worst period of Facebook.
If you're not from the West Coast, you may not know of the annoyance of Burning Man.
Yeah. It seems like 70% of Los Angeles, like, caravans up to Burning Man every year and then just, like, posts really gross photos of themselves, like, not having showered and wearing pink tutus for the rest of the month.
I also read a really interesting article this week about all of the carbon emissions that happened at Burning Man.
Fascinating.
Which obviously goes so counter to what the people...
The ethos.
Right, exactly. So that I thought was interesting too, because it's sort of like, you know what, you guys, you're not helping anyone. You're not doing what you think you're doing.
No. There's so much waste at Burning Man, P.S.
Yeah.
That's like, it's because people basically have to bring an entire home with them that they use for one week of the year.
Yeah, it's like thousands of RVs.
Like descending on one place for a week's worth of use or whatever, and then, or 2 weeks, and then they just
and
leave
then,
again.
And then
and all those things. All those costumes... Those manufacturing all those pink tutus isn't helping the environment at all.
No, that's right. Imagine all the Bangladeshi underpaid workers.
Exactly. Those aren't recycled pink tutus.
No, they're not.
In any case, two final items.
Yes.
Neither of which we have stories for.
No.
The VMAs are this weekend.
Yes.
Not important. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
I think I saw something about the fact that they were, like, going to have Miley Cyrus. They're going to be on, like, mega delay.
Yes.
I think. Because... You know, there's concerns about
the Miley factor.
Right. Oh, and she came out as pansexual this weekend.
I heard that,
that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure in her context what that changes or means about...
I'm not sure either.
Like, I feel like it just is like the thing that you would expect Miley Cyrus to be. So I'm like, she made up a word for a sexual orientation that I'm not sure means the same thing as it means for it. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an orientation. That's
right.
The whole point.
Right. She's,
that's the
orientations.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she... It's fine.
Yeah.
She's decided to do what she does.
Yeah.
And then, lastly, I could not actually access this when I tried to click on it online.
I couldn't find it either because I was going to attempt to stream it.
Well,
because it was on Friday night. Like,
I mean,
what would have been better
than
about
this?
It?
But, so Sarah Palin apparently interviewed Donald Trump on some weird right-wing, like internet news site or something.
Yeah.
Which is the interview of the century.
One radio something?
Yeah, something like that.
I can't even remember.
It was like weird...
She was like guest hosting it all week, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But in any case, if you guys can find this interview, please send it
our
way.
Or we'll try and find it. And if we find it, we'll post it on the website.
Obviously. If we haven't found it yet, it's not posted.
I can
only
imagine that we're all going to want to watch it.
Duh. It sounds like the greatest interview in history.
Yeah.
So in any case, we'll be back next week with hopefully more updates about poll numbers that continue to slide in favorable directions for us.
Yes.
And if not that... Something else. Something end of August-y. Something Labor Day-esque, because it will be Labor Day weekend.
It is Labor Day.
We'll talk about labor a little.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
So in any case, we'll talk to you then. Oh, and thanks to my dad for being on, obviously. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.